So the Dhamma for today is called the Dhamma Savanani Sangsa, the benefits of listening to the Dhamma. It shouldn't be any surprise that listening to the Dhamma is considered something beneficial. We might even say it's an essential part of the Buddha's teaching, more so than perhaps other religions or spiritual practices or spiritual paths. The teaching of the Buddha is a teaching. It's a instructional path where one practices according to the instruction that one has learned. So there's a lot of emphasis placed on listening to the Dhamma. First, we can talk about what listening to the Dhamma isn't. Listening to the Dhamma isn't a replacement for practice. And this is a mistake that we can see made both consciously and unconsciously. Consciously, it can happen that we think that explicitly that listening to the Dhamma is proper Buddhist practice, and that by listening to the Dhamma we will gain some kind of progress on the path. When in fact, technically, listening to the Dhamma itself doesn't give you any progress on the path. It's used instead, of course, to tell you the path that you can then follow. Unconsciously, it can be that intellectually you know that listening to the Dhamma isn't the path because, well, the Dhamma itself says this many times, the Buddha said, that it's not just listening and it's not just learning that leads to enlightenment. One has to actually practice. And yet, it's also possible for one to mistake this intellectual understanding with actual, direct, practical understanding. So one might feel like one already knows the truth, you know, thinking that one has learned the Dhamma and understands the concepts of mindfulness and suffering and the cause of suffering. One understands the three characteristics and so might think that it might be difficult for one to actually apply oneself to the practice as one thinks one is practicing as a result of one's intellectual study. So just to be clear that intellectual study, even intellectual understanding that comes from studying isn't a replacement for practice. Listening to the Dhamma isn't disconnected from the practice. So it isn't something that should be taken as simply an intellectual exercise. It isn't for the purpose of edification. It isn't for the purpose of intellectualization. Listening to the Dhamma is supposed to be something that you practice. And finally, it isn't something you can omit or avoid. Listening to the Dhamma is something that is essential. It isn't something that is unessential. And this is something that can be an explicit conscious view, and it can also be an unconscious perception that leads one astray. So obviously one could have the idea that one doesn't need to listen to the Dhamma. One can have the idea that it's not necessary, that for example mindfulness is something so simple that you don't need to even learn about it. You hear the word mindfulness and you can hear people say this who haven't studied or learned anything about Buddhism say, well, I'm mindful, or I meditate. And they'll explain to you something that they do based on their own previous understanding of what meditation is or what mindfulness is. And this is something that you can see a problem even when people learn the teaching, is that they carry along their own biases, their own preconceived ideas about meditation and mindfulness. And a common one is people thinking that meditation should be calm, should be peaceful, should be a pleasant experience, when Of course, mindfulness is very often very much the opposite. It's unpleasant, it's uncomfortable, purposefully, because it challenges you and it's meant to make you confront things that you normally try to avoid, to help you see your reactions, your judgments, and help you to overcome them, which you couldn't do if you weren't taken out of your comfort zone. For example, so our preconceived ideas about meditation are a big reason why we have to learn and we have to be taught how to meditate, and often taught repeatedly and reminded repeatedly that these ideas that we have about things like meditation, mindfulness, suffering, even Buddhism and the Buddhist teaching can often be taught culturally and understood as we grow for those people who grew up as Buddhists, and implicitly understood, but not in a way that will actually lead to freedom from suffering. So, to put it simply, listening to the Dhamma is the precursor to the path, that in order to follow the teachings, you have to learn them, and that is explicitly what it's for. As to the benefits, the reasons for practice, the reasons for listening to the Dhamma, or what comes from listening to the Dhamma, well, these teachings help us understand the proper time to listen to the Dhamma, because it's not something, as I said, that can replace the teaching, but it's also not something that should or can be taken in excess, meaning there's a good amount and a good time to listen to the Dhamma, and there are good reasons to listen to the Dhamma. And so these benefits help us to understand and help us to use intellectual learning in the proper way. So the first benefit is the most obvious one. You learn things that you didn't know before. And this is obviously something that can happen constantly throughout our practice. It's why people seek out more and more and often excessive study, because they crave and want to learn something new. But that's not what is meant here, that you should learn every little piece of teaching of the Buddha and some esoteric teachings that you haven't learned before. It really means that the first step, obviously, is to learn about the Buddha's teaching. And so it may seem quite obvious and not even worth talking about, but it's, I think, very much worth stressing how important this fact is, that a big reason why Buddhism isn't practiced, I mean, it's kind of silly to say, is because people haven't heard it. But teaching on an international level, you see this so clearly, how in fact it comes to be in many cases the most important reason why people don't practice is simply that they haven't heard the teachings, where people will often surprise you that once they are given just the very basics, just the most simple, straightforward, cut and dried instruction on what is the four foundations of mindfulness, how do you do walking meditation, how do you do sitting meditation, and can go very far, often changing their lives simply by receiving the instruction. You know, I mean, people who didn't keep the five precepts simply because they haven't heard them. And more importantly, people who haven't practiced meditation, people who haven't had any direction of what is the cause of suffering or what is suffering or the way out of suffering, simply because they haven't heard it. It's a big reason for that encourages us to teach internationally, because in the world there are still many people, the Buddha said, aparajika jatika, people who have little dust in their eyes, only a little bit of blindness. And if they were just given this basic teaching, of course for many people this isn't the case, and they will hear about the Buddha's teaching and not understand it and have to practice and often be persuaded or made to understand the benefits. However, regardless, in all cases, the most important first step is learning things that you haven't learned before. Of course, for all of us who are already practicing, there's still this great benefit of learning new things and helping to broaden our knowledge of the Buddha's teaching. The second benefit is things that you've already learned but didn't understand can come to be understood more clearly. And this is really the essence of what it means to teach the Dhamma, I think, most especially in modern times. It seems that there were cases, or there are cases where one might simply repeat the Buddha's teaching verbatim. Nowadays, we're more inclined to read the teaching from books. And so when it comes to actually teaching, we'll much more often be explaining, as I'm doing right now, explaining the Buddha's teaching. So here we have these five dhammas, and I'm going to explain them piece by piece. And so this is what is my duty, to explain the teachings. And you see this isn't something new. You see this in the actual teachings where the Buddha would explain his teachings, or one of his disciples would explain something the Buddha had said, or that sort of thing, to expand upon it. And something important to understand about this aspect of the Buddha's teaching, this aspect of listening to the Dhamma, is that any teaching that isn't a verbatim explanation of the Buddha is going to be, or a verbatim repetition of what the Buddha said, is going to be an explanation. It isn't a giving of the Buddha's teaching. I'm not giving you the Buddha's teaching, I'm explaining it. And that may seem pedantic, but it's an important distinction, because anyone who tells you that they're giving you the Buddha's teaching is always going to be explaining it. And what this means is that if you are providing a new explanation, it's far more likely that you're providing your interpretation of the Buddha's teaching than actually giving the Buddha's teaching, let alone the correct or the proper explanation. What I'm trying to say is that it's quite common for people to follow their own ideas and to distort the Buddha's teaching to fit their own views and their own ideas by saying things like the orthodox interpretation, or the commentaries that we have that explain the Buddha's teaching, are out of line with the Buddha's teaching. You'll often hear people say, oh no, I just follow the Buddha's teaching, I don't follow the commentaries. But when someone says that, what they're saying is that I follow my own interpretation of the teachings rather than the interpretation that has been handed down generation after generation. So I just want to stress that this, in terms of this point, that it's essential that if and when we are going to explain the Buddha's teaching, that we're sure that this is the accurate and proper explanation. And the best way to do that, of course, is to take the same explanation, or to learn the explanation, from our teachers. And not just our teachers, but their teachers, and the teachers that have passed the very same accurate explanation of the Buddha's teaching. So what this means is we follow the commentaries, and we try our best when explaining the Dhamma, when trying to explain what the Buddha's teaching means, that we follow the actual tradition, and we follow the explanations as they have been handed down. This is an important reason for listening to the Dhamma, and the important thing here is that we have the proper explanation. And what I mean is that it's not difficult to give an accurate verbatim recitation of the Buddha's teaching, to say the Buddha said exactly this and this and this, but to explain it properly is much more difficult and much more dangerous, much more open to distortion and misunderstanding. So you could say this is a great reason, a great benefit of hearing a proper explanation, is that it can be rare and it's valuable because of how difficult it is. That you have to understand first the Buddha's teaching in order to be able to explain it. Nonetheless, the things that we don't yet understand, there are two ways that we come to understand them better, and one of them is listening to the Dhamma. The other, of course, is asking questions. So another important aspect of our learning is not just going to be listening to the Dhamma, but it will also be discussing the Dhamma with the teacher, asking questions and so on. But a great benefit of study of the Dhamma is going to be understanding things that we haven't understood yet. The third benefit of listening to the Dhamma is that we should clear up any doubts that we might have. Doubt is one of the five hindrances, and in some ways it's the most dangerous of the five hindrances. Doubt is one of the big things that leads us to the wrong path, but most directly it prevents us from following the path. It's important to understand that doubt is not a good thing. Even though the thing you might be doubting is something that it's reasonable to doubt. The Buddha, there's this famous sutta, the Kalama Sutta, where the Buddha found that this population of this village or this country, this area, the Kalamas, were very confused because there were many different teachers, all teaching something very different. And the Buddha said, yes, yes, it is reasonable that you should doubt. But don't misunderstand that that doesn't mean that doubting is a good thing. Doubting is the problem. And it's very important through listening to the Dhamma and also through practicing the Dhamma that you overcome doubt. One of the great reasons for hearing the Dhamma, for having instruction on the Buddha's teaching, is to free yourself from those doubts. So if you have learned the Buddha's teaching and you've learned how to practice, having a regular source of instruction about what are the four foundations of mindfulness, what are the five aggregates, how to practice them, learning about the Four Noble Truths and so on, learning about the three characteristics and so on, can be very helpful for helping us to overcome this doubt. And so we should understand, first of all, that doubt is a hindrance of concern, something that we should pay attention to. And to understand that sometimes you can solve the doubts by yourself through facing the doubt and noting it, but sometimes it's about a question that you based on lack of understanding. And so again, listening to the Dhamma or discussing the Dhamma, asking questions of your teacher is a great way to free yourself from doubt. Most important is to not let the doubt fester, to not think that it's good to be doubting, right? And often we think that doubt is a sign of proper intellectual investigation. But the thing about doubt is that it weakens the mind. It's like you're at a fork in the road and you can't decide which way to go. Often when you face the doubt, when you free yourself from the doubt through study, through questioning, and most importantly through practice, the fork in the road simply disappears when you free yourself from the weakness, the lack of conviction that would lead you in the right direction. The fourth benefit is that listening to the Dhamma frees you from wrong views. So another very important obstacle on the path, maybe you could say even more dangerous, well yes, definitely more dangerous than doubt, is wrong view. What this means is wrong understanding of the practice, the wrong idea of truth, of reality, some view or understanding that is out of touch with the nature, or out of sync with the truth, with reality. So the idea that there is no result of our deeds, things happen randomly, the idea that there is a God in control or that we are in control, these sorts of things, or more simply, wrong ideas of practice. Again, as I said, that practice should be pleasant, that one should cling to pleasant feelings, that one should strive for pleasant feelings, even the simple idea that one should try to fix or control one's experiences is out of touch with the practice of mindfulness, which is instead just about facing and understanding experiences rather than fixing or changing them or controlling them. So these kind of things, listening to the Dhamma can be a great reminder to help fix our wrong views. It's something that you often see amongst those who don't take a teacher in meditation practice, who don't have guidance, who practice on their own, that they might start with the best intentions, even with the best instruction, but over time gradually become blind to their own distortions or perversions of the path, where they will get stuck on something, fixated on something, attached to something and forget to be mindful and forget to face it and lose their objectivity and as a result lose their clarity and are never able to see the truth of the experiences. The fifth benefit of listening to the Dhamma is that listening to the Dhamma leads to purity of mind. Meaning not just out of the instruction that you get from the Dhamma, but actually the act of listening to the Dhamma itself can be purifying. How this works is, first of all, simply the appreciation that what you're listening to is the Buddha's teaching. Even if we think about these five benefits of listening to the Dhamma, if we think of them as the Buddha's teaching, immediately or from the start, we're already in a good state of mind. We're already appreciative, remembering the Buddha, thinking of his teachings, and having a strong inclination towards purity and towards goodness. I mean, at this time, listening to the Dhamma, we're not killing, we're not stealing, we're not engaging even in sensual pleasures of any kind. We're not engaging in wrong speech, useless speech. We're not becoming intoxicated. Our minds are constantly brought back to the present moment. Listening to the Dhamma can be a great source of meditation practice. Sometimes practicing in your room, you become sloppy, where you'll allow yourself to stretch or to go outside, stand up, or become distracted. But listening to the Dhamma, especially in a group, you're much more forced to be present, and you're brought back to the present. If the teacher is teaching about mindfulness, reminding you about the present experience, that's what's happening right now as we're listening to the Dhamma. There's very much going on with our bodies and our minds, and so sometimes we might get distracted and unwholesomeness will arise. You can become bored or frustrated, or you have cravings for something else that you might rather be doing. But to be reminded again and again, to be brought back to the Buddha's teaching, often when the teaching is about mindfulness or about practice, that you can find yourself very much, in a sense, forced to face experience rather than run away from it. You're no longer free to give your mind the freedom to wander into unwholesomeness, greed, anger, delusion. That you're constantly brought back by the Dhamma. So this is why you see often in the teachings, the stories that we hear about the Buddha's teaching that we have recorded, that people listening to the Buddha's teaching would often become enlightened. And people get the wrong idea that, as I said, that listening to the Dhamma is a replacement for practice. They get the idea that it was the intellectual understanding of the teachings that led these people to become enlightened as they were listening to the Buddha's teaching. But it's not actually anything like that. There are stories of animals listening to the Buddha's teaching who didn't even understand his words, who couldn't become enlightened, obviously, but gained great purity of mind. There's a story of a frog that was killed when listening to the Buddha's teaching, but because of his purity of mind and just the resonance listening to the Buddha's voice, the frog was reborn as an angel and came to see the Buddha and said, "I don't know what I did, but somehow I was reborn as an angel." And the Buddha said, "Oh, you were a frog." And yeah, that's because of the purity of the Dhamma, listening to the Dhamma. So obviously there's much more to that, and it has much to do with the intellectual understanding. But the purity that comes isn't from the intellectual understanding, it's from the practice that can and does quite often go hand in hand with listening to the Dhamma. So in this way we see that the Dhamma is absolutely useful, absolutely necessary for our practice, and something that we should engage in. But I think especially thinking about the fifth benefit, we have to remind ourselves that the true benefit and the true reason is for gaining purity of mind and clarity of mind. It's something that is practical and very real and not limited to intellectual understanding. So that the Dhamma that we do listen to, that we do think about, that we do read about, should be directly related to our further progress on the path. And so we shouldn't spend all our time listening to the Dhamma thinking it's a replacement, but we should use it in so much as it is a support for the very crucial, the very difficult work of cultivating mindfulness to see clearly and to free ourselves from craving and from suffering. So something to keep in mind, and a reminder of why we practice and why we listen to the Dhamma and how we should listen to the Dhamma, that listening to the Dhamma should and can often be an actual meditation practice, where instead of only paying attention to the meaning of the words, you can actually be aware of the sound of the voice, listening to the speech as an experience, where it arises and ceases, and arises and ceases uncontrollably, and teaches you very clearly the nature of experience as being uncontrollable, unpredictable. Listening to someone else speak is a great way to experience firsthand the unpredictable and uncontrollable nature of experience, because you're not in control of the sound, when it's going to happen. You don't know when it's going to happen, you don't know what sound is going to come. It can be quite jarring and quite disturbing if you're clinging, if you're expecting, if you have any kind of attachment to experiences. You'll see that experiences are not subject to your control, not amenable to your expectations. Not only that, the experiences that you have listening to the Dhamma, having to sit still, pain in the legs or the back, or distractions in the mind, craving something, or bored or distracted or anything like that. But these are also not controllable, and not something you can anticipate, not amenable to your expectations, and so on. So just like any meditation practice, listening to the Dhamma can be most fruitful in that way. And of course there's the added benefit, as I said, of being reminded constantly. So here I am reminding you of these things, and it shouldn't be used as a replacement for you doing the work yourself on your own to remind yourself and to learn organically how to do this for yourself, but from time to time and in moderation, being reminded of these things is a crucial part of how we come to develop them on our own. So those are the benefits of listening to the Dhamma, and that's the Dhamma for today. Any questions? Well, he didn't understand the teaching, that's the thing, but his purity of mind because he felt the Buddha's purity. It's like if you see a monk walking on Pindapata, the people are, that's why they're so happy to give us food in the morning, because they see, wow, these people are so pure. So they gain this purity of mind because they just see us, and they see something that resonates with them. So even animals can resonate with something so pure as the Buddha teaching.